Hello again, and welcome to another terrific episode of Musings on Golf, where today you'll hear powerful stories from Stacy Lewis, the 2024 U.S. Solheim Cup captain. My name is Kelly Elbert, and along with my co-host and good pal Bob Bupka, we'll also talk team success on competing circuits from Australia all the way to New Orleans. Bob, you and I had a wonderful interview with Stacy Lewis, and man, is she ever easy to cheer for, considering all she's overcome in her life and all she's accomplished.
A very, very special person, and I'm not just talking about her ability to play this wonderful world of golf. She's going to be an outstanding captain, no doubt about that, and we're rooting for you, Stacy, and we certainly appreciated you taking that time to spend some quality time with us on Musings on Golf.
Yeah, it was an interesting situation, in that she's the captain for consecutive years because of COVID. As with so many things, the dates for the Solheim Cup were changed. And last year, while the U.S. team didn't win, they didn't lose either. They tied, and that meant that the Europeans kept hold of the Solheim Cup. And I know, Bob, for Stacy, the opportunity at Robert Trent Jones Golf Club outside of our nation's capital in September to win the matches and get the Solheim Cup back means so much.
It really does. The Solheim Cup rapidly gaining on the Ryder Cup. And anytime these players play for their country to a T, Kelly, they say it's so much different than playing for yourself or playing for money or playing for a title. When you play for that red, white, and blue flag of the USA, it is something that they cherish for the rest of their lives.
You know, we've been fortunate to have some terrific guests on Musings on Golf who have been captains. Judy Rankin, Julie Inkster come to mind. I know to hold that captaincy is extremely special. Hey, Bob, interesting, fascinating, almost a unique weekend in elite golf in that you had two team events, really, if you will, that turned out to be very successful. LIV Golf Adelaide in Australia, Greg Norman's home country, and it's home to record numbers. 77,000 people were on hand last year, the best numbers they had in 2023, and they smashed those numbers with 94,000 in attendance for really what's become kind of the Waste Management Phoenix Open type of event for LIV Golf. They're very rowdy crowds. They have a par 3 12th hole. It's called the Watering Hole, and you can understand what goes on there. And then to top it all off, Bob, the All-Australian team led by Cam Smith, including Mark Leishman, Matt Jones, and Lucas Herbert, ended up winning the team event, and that just set everybody off. So congratulations to LIV Golf. At least they've got it figured out in Australia. There's also a LIV Golf team for South Africa that Louis Oosthuizen leads. You know, maybe Cape Town's the next spot that they're going to go after.
Well, they're both hotbeds of golf. We were fortunate enough to have several trips down to Australia. Those people love their golf, and Cape Town also. You wouldn't think of it as a popular spot to play golf, but it really is, and very knowledgeable fans. So I got to tip our hats to LIV. Great success to Australia. I expect the same thing at Cape Town.
Yeah, and in New Orleans, I wasn't particularly impressed with the leaderboard going into Sunday, but everything, all the Irish eyes were smiling by the end of the day with Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry ending up winning the team competition at the Zurich Invitational in a playoff. And then I saw, you know, I'm sure it's gone viral. People have seen Rory and Shane singing Journey's great song, Don't Stop Believin', with a bunch of rowdy fans afterward. Bob, that's exactly what the PGA Tour needs. They needed a big time winner name wise in New Orleans. They got it. And then they need to have their players continue to have the connection with fans in ways like that.
Well, it was a special event. You know, that's Rory's 25th win on the PGA Tour. And it's the third time that he's won an event when it's the first time that he's playing in that event. Rory had never played down in the Zurich Classic, and he shows up, and what a partnership. You almost sensed all week that, you know, somehow, some way, they were going to scratch and claw and get to the the final closing holes, and then they had just what it takes to pull it out, a very popular win. They may still be celebrating down in New Orleans, knowing Shane Lowry like I do.
Yeah, and further shows the strength when it comes to the Ryder Cup of having those two guys on the European team, being partners, formidable to say the least. Hey, Bob, we got a new sponsor this week at the PGA Tour event in Dallas. CJ Group has taken over, and it's the CJ Group Byron Nelson. Fascinating story and a really cool story. 16-year-old English lad named Chris Kim. His mother was a former South Korean LPGA player. He gets a special exemption into the event. We wish him well. But when I hear the name Byron Nelson, it's so special. And you had the opportunity, Bob, to get to spend some really valuable time with Mr. Nelson. What a special, sweet man he was. And let's have a listen to a couple of those opportunities that you had to spend some time talking with the great Byron Nelson.
Mr. Nelson, where'd the name Lord come? You're referred to as Lord Byron Nelson.
Well, that happened in 1937 when I won the match the first time. O.B. Keeler covered the tournament. He was the only main rider there, and he was a man that knew poetry. And Lord Byron, he told me about a poem that Lord Byron had written one time, real tough, and he said, that's where you play today. You know what I mean? Just tough. And he said, it's tough, and that's the way you remind me. And so the next day, he was covering Associated Press. Lord Byron wins the Masters, and he stuck. That's it.
I wanted to find out from Lord Byron, and as you accurately said, Kelly, there was no doubt when I was in his presence, I was in the presence of royalty. And in equal doses, not only what he accomplished on the PGA Tour, winning 11 straight events, which was absolutely incredible. But what a gentleman, an absolute gentleman to be in his presence. One thing I wanted to ask him is how he wanted to be remembered.
Well, the thing that's more important to me is the way I live now is people think that I'm a gentleman, think I'm a good Christian man, and that I treat people right. And that's what I want to be remembered more at. The way I am, what kind of a person I am, than the fact that I did play good golf.
Lord Byron, and one other story that I had, we were down at the World Golf Hall of Fame. They were unveiling the Byron Nelson exhibit, and I had played some golf at Palmetto, which is in Aiken, South Carolina, not too far away from Augusta National. And in the pro shop there, they have a big board that has all the winners of their member guests. And I happen to note that in 1943, Byron Nelson won the member guest. So now we flash forward to the Hall of Fame, and they have, I think the number was 61 of Byron Nelson's victories up on this big board. And I'm standing there with Byron, and I said, Mr. Nelson, they left out one of your wins. He said, which one? And I said, I know for a fact you won a 1943 member guest at Palmetto, a fantastic golf course in Aiken. He said, oh, yeah, I remember that. He said, that 17th hole, that par three there? And he said, my partner hit it within 2 feet. He made the putt, and he got a shot there. That was a one, and so we went on to win. The winner's check was $5,000, Bob, and it was supposed to be divided between the two of us, and right after the check was presented, my partner said, here, Mr. Nelson, you get to keep this whole check. I said, golly, Mr. Nelson, he had to have some kind of money, give you $2,500. He said, Bob, he was the president of Bethlehem Steel. He could afford it. But Byron Nelson, winner of the 1943 member guest at Palmetto Golf Club. And what sets Palmetto aside from every other golf course in America? Their clubhouse is an absolute duplicate of the Shinnecock Clubhouse, only in miniature. So anybody that's familiar with Shinnecock, when you pull on the property at Palmetto, you do a double take, because right in front of you is the miniature clubhouse of Shinnecock. So just some of the fond memories with Byron Nelson, and what an event he's going to have this week. And as you mentioned, that 16-year-old Englishman by the name of Chris Kim, apparently quite a talent. We'll see how he performs.
Yeah, we hope he performs really well. You know, I don't know, Bob. I tend to get kind of emotional every time I hear Byron Nelson's voice. There was something, as you said, of royalty. There was something grand about him, but grand in an understated way. And you know, his play, that streak of what, 11 in a row when he won on tour, certainly was the ultimate, right, for him. But you never ever really heard him talking about Byron Nelson. I think that's what's always made him a special part. We have so many special people who've played this game at the highest level, but I really and truly, I don't know if there's anyone who's been as successful and yet as genuine, as humble as Byron Nelson.
I agree with you, Kelly. And the other thing for golf fans and fans of Musings on Golf, how about Ben Hogan, Byron Nelson, both caddies at the same golf club when they were 12 years old? And obviously no one had any inclination that both those were going to be giants, maybe super giants in the game of golf, yet they shared caddy duties at Glen Gordon Country Club. To me, that's just an amazing statistic.
I would think they helped the members at Glen Gordon with their game. They had a pretty good eye for what was going on out there. Bob, you know, Mr. Nelson was a Ryder Cup captain. Ben Hogan was a Ryder Cup captain. And everything I'm hearing is that either the week of the PGA Championship or right around it, meaning either before or right after, Tiger Woods is going to be named the 2025 U.S. Ryder Cup captain for the what will be a crazy 3 days at Bethpage on Long Island. The PGA of America typically by now has announced their captain, but I know Tiger already mentioned that he was going to be talking with Seth Wall, who's the CEO of the PGA of America. Something's going to happen, and I think it's going to be very exciting for golf. Again, as we lead into Stacey Lewis, I'm just always impressed, Bob, with people who overcome. And Stacey, as a really just a kid, dealt with scoliosis, wore a back brace, as you'll hear, and dealt with it. And golf is so special to her, just the opportunity to be able to play, to get that thing literally off her back, not only to be able to play collegiately at the University of Arkansas, but to have had a terrific career so far, two-time winner on the LPGA Tour. And I don't know about you, but I'm rooting for her come September for the U.S. getting the Solheim Cup back.
And I think everybody in America shares those feelings, Kelly.
And you'll be hearing from Captain Stacey Lewis right after these messages. Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry.
Your most important shot is the one you're about to hit. And whether it's the first drive of the day, a difficult approach from a tight lie, or a bunker shot to save par, you need to know your golf ball will perform exactly the way you need it to. Superior performance on every type of shot. It's why the majority of the world's best players choose the Pro V1 or Pro V1X, and why you should too.
Celebrating its 30th year, the South Florida PGA Golf Pass offers the ultimate summer golf experience with special access to more than 100 private, semi-private, and public golf facilities. From May 1st through October 31st, Golf Pass members can enjoy special low rates, exclusive member-only outings, special offers, and more. For just $60, you can purchase the South Florida PGA Golf Pass and instantly gain access to all these great benefits through the member-only app. It's simple. Pay, download, play. Visit sfpgagolf.com/golfpass for more information. That's sfpgagolf.com/golfpass. Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Bob, for the second consecutive year, our guest today has the honor of serving as captain of the United States Solheim Cup team when the Americans face the Europeans in September outside of our nation's capital. Twice she has won major championships on the LPGA Tour, and she'll be trying to gain her first victory as captain after a 14-all tie last year in Spain kept the cup in European hands. Captain Stacy Lewis, thanks for joining us on Musings on Golf. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, Stacy, certainly a thrill to have you on with us. I wanted to ask you if you had any opportunity at all to see what transpired at the Valero Texas Open. Denny McCarthy, unbelievable string of birdies, and then in the playoff puts it in the water, doesn't get that victory. How tough is that for a player to overcome?
You know, I mean, I think for him, I mean, yeah, it's hard. He hit that wedge shot in the water, but I mean, he did so many good things to get to that position. You know, I didn't see a ton of it. I was watching Nelly, you know, go win her fourth tournament in a row, but I did see the playoff, and you just hate to have it end that way. I mean, he played so good on that back nine. You just would rather, you know, see them kind of duke it out and maybe make a couple more birdies.
You know, Stacy, one other thing. With what's transpiring on the men's game right now and the performances of Nelly and you know, what happened at the Augusta National, the women's amateur, is this a golden opportunity for the LPGA and women's golf to take some of the strides like NCAA women's basketball has taken?
Yeah, I mean, now is the time. I mean, we're seeing it already in the sponsorships and where we're going with our tour, but you know, I don't know if Nelly's gotten the credit that she deserves and has gotten the attention that this deserves. I mean, she is playing unbelievable golf. Like, people have no idea how good she is and what she's doing. And so I just wish people would pay attention a little bit more and talk about her more. And you know, I wish that whole match on Sunday would have been on TV. You know, we only got to see about 7 or 8 holes of it. So, you know, we still got a long ways to go in the women's game, and we need the TV coverage and the media coverage to kind of step up to help us go in that direction.
You know, winning once is quite an accomplishment. You win 4 in a row. It's beyond belief. You've been a captain. You've been a player on the Solheim Cup. For our listeners, can you explain the differences between those two roles?
Oh my gosh, they're so different. You know, the captain, you work for almost 1.5, 2 years for that 1 week. And, you know, I'm planning every little detail I can plan, down to what they're going to eat every day, to the schedule for each day. Where when you show up as a player, you're really just worried about getting the ball in the hole. Who am I going to play with? Where do I need to be? And what time do I need to be there? So, it's completely different being a captain versus playing. It's exhausting being a captain. I thought it was exhausting playing, but it's a whole nother level when you're captain. You know, you're on the tee with that first match. You're out on the golf course till the last match is over. I ate dinner at 9 o'clock every night. I think I sat down for lunch one day all week. So it's just a completely different animal.
What about that Robert Trent Jones Golf Club, where it's going to be contested? Any edge for the European side or the American side?
You know, I honestly haven't played the golf course. I've driven around it. Last time I was there, it was pretty chilly, so I wasn't ready to play some golf. But I do think it's going to be set up a little bit more for ball strikers. You know, you got to hit it straight. There's a lot of bunkering off of tees, which I'm hoping plays to our advantage. You know, we've got a lot of really straight hitters. I'd say Europe right now has more kind of your bombers, the girls that hit it really far. So, you know, I'm going to do whatever I can in the next few months to get it set up to our advantage.
We're thrilled to be joined by Stacy Lewis, the 2024 U.S. Solheim Cup captain here on Musings on Golf. Hey, Captain, obviously because of what happened with COVID, it reworked so many of the scheduling. So therefore, you have this back-to-back Solheim Cup, which is, I don't know that it's ever happened before. But I'm wondering, having just now a year, right? You don't have to wait another year. As far as your captaincy, about things that you may have learned that you did do in Spain that you may or may not do again at RTJ in the fall?
We had a ton of success in Spain. I know the result wasn't what we wanted, but we went over there with five rookies and really got them acclimated to what the Solheim Cup is and, you know, what the week is about. You know, I thought we did a really good job of preparing them stats-wise and who they were going to play with, you know, really just tried to prepare them as much as we could for what they were going to see that week. And I've continued to do that. You know, they know what's going on. They know what I'm working on. Just try to keep them involved in the process more than anything, because that has created a lot more buy-in. So, but more than anything, just the back-to-back has allowed them to stay hungry. You know, this is still fresh in everybody's minds. And the teams, there's been some more shuffling in the last few months than I thought there was going to be. I thought the team was going to be pretty similar, but we've had some girls start to play some really good golf. So they're gonna make my job a little bit more difficult.
You mentioned about the, you know, some of the information that you provide, and you know this as well as anybody with the use of analytics and data. And I read that was a big part of your preparation for Spain. Can you just maybe delve just a little bit deeper into some of the things that you might have seen that allowed you to pair two women together, or in your selection of your three captains picks?
Yeah, I mean, stats was I used heavily in what we were doing, and a lot of that was I love stats. You know, I'm a numbers person, and all kind of makes sense in my head to me. But it was also, you know, given the five rookies, we didn't have any pairings that we were really going to be able to carry over from past years. So we were starting with a clean slate. You know, there was basically nothing to work with. You know, we didn't have a Lexi Thompson, Christy Kerr pairing that we could just send them out and let them go. So it was really trying, getting to learn the girls and kind of their formula of what makes them successful. So some you have are great ball strikers, and that's kind of what carries them. Some you have are great putters, and that's what carries them. And so it's how do you put them together in pairings to hide what they're not as good at? Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, probably a good example was Danielle Kang was really struggling with her ball striking, but her short game is unbelievable. And so you put her with an Andrea Lee, that's a great ball striker, on a golf course where I think it was, if you teed off on the odds, you were hitting 13 approach shots, you know, so you're able to kind of hide what Danielle wasn't doing very good. But then you know, letting her putt and chip and go to town, I mean, they crushed it together. So that was kind of the perfect example of how we made it work. And then it created belief within the girls of, you know, this is why your pairing's going to work. And, you know, after a few days of playing practice rounds, they're like, this is awesome. Like, this is really going to work. So it was cool to see the buy-in and their belief in it.
Well, that's the term, right? The buy-in that they see what you're trying to do has to give them a lot of confidence, right?
Yeah, for sure. And just to, you know, just there's proof, you know, I'm not just putting you guys together because you're friends, you know, I'm putting you together for a purpose. And there were some pairings, you know, we had some pairings come up that were statistically really good, but maybe personality-wise, they didn't work. And so we went to option B and kept going from there.
Stacey, I know that just simply having the ability to play the great game of golf is one that you treasure. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about what you dealt with scoliosis growing up, having a back brace all those years, finally getting that off and allowing you to live a life filled with a lot of golf. It was quite an obstacle for quite a period of time, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I was diagnosed with scoliosis at 11. And, you know, at the time it was, we're going to wear a back brace for 2 or 3 years. And the brace basically, it kind of holds you straight, allows you to grow, and hopefully your spine becomes straighter as you grow. I mean, that's, in theory, that's what's supposed to work. And so the problem was I didn't finish growing until I was almost 18 years old. So I wore this back brace 18 hours a day for 6.5 years.
Wow.
So I wore it to school, wore it to bed. Golf was really, that was the time I got to take it off. 4 hours, go play around the golf. I think that's why golf became part of my life. It was kind of a place where I could go just be like everybody else. I didn't feel any different or anything like that. And so this was my senior year of high school. Finally get the word, back braces done. Go back to the doctor three, four months later for a checkup. And my curve has now gotten significantly worse. Basically, the bracing didn't work after doing everything, doing what you're supposed to do, and they don't know why. So graduated high school, and a month after graduation, had surgery. They put a rod and 5 screws in my back to straighten out my spine. Ended up back in a back brace for 3 more months. So it was quite the ordeal. I wouldn't wish it on anybody, to go through that as a kid.
Yeah.
But it's also made me the person that I am. You deal with adversity, you deal with, bad things, and you got to figure out a way to pick yourself up and move on. And I think that's why I've always been better coming from behind on the golf course. It's just my back's against the wall. You're going to see that toughness and the fight in me. And, I think it's made me the player that I am.
Yeah. And I've got to think that all those battles really steeled you. Once you started at Arkansas, you end up being a four-time All-American. It had to be a driving force in some way, psychologically, physically, yeah, et cetera, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I went there, I was probably 4 months out of back surgery. I still couldn't bend or twist when I started school. I couldn't lift more than 5 pounds, so my freshman year was spent, especially that first semester, I rode in the golf cart at practice and watched practice. And I learned a lot watching, I sit there with my coaches and, and get their feedback of why are they hitting it here? Or they're three putting from 20 feet or, just like little things about the game that I learned just watching. And then that December, I was cleared to finally go play some golf and, get back to it. And there was just such an appreciation if I get to go play. This is not, I have to go to practice or I have to go to workouts. I actually get to do workouts. Like, I was so excited to get to do things again that I love to practice. I still, to this day, I love to practice, because I get to do it. When that doctor told me I was having surgery, I thought golf was done.
Well, you certainly handled that adversity very well. It happened over the weekend. What are your thoughts about your new basketball coach at the University of Arkansas?
That's true. I don't know if that's final yet, but I'm not surprised. They like to make a splash, and we'll see how it works out.
Yeah, I think Coach Calipari is going to bring a very different dynamic to Razorback Nation, right?
Yes, it'll be a very different dynamic, but you know what? The Razorback fans, man, they are hungry for some wins, some championships, so I'm not surprised.
All right, you won your first major title at the 2011 Kraft Nabisco Championship. What stands out about that victory? And certainly you have many wonderful memories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that was first win. And the way I did it, I was going toe-to-toe with Yanni Singh, who was dominant number one in the world at the time. Just the way I played. Sunday was tough. It was super windy. Just was playing really hard, but it was more just the competing against Yanni and making it a first win. I mean, it was pretty special.
What were you down the stretch trying to win that first major? Were you nervous? What was it like?
Oh, so nervous. Yeah, so nervous. We made the turn on 9. I think we had 2-shot swing on 9, and that's when we became tied. And so that's when things really kind of got into the thick of it. I remember being really nervous on 15 fairway and hit a wedge shot into a bunker, made bogey. And that's really when I got nervous. I was like, the realization of where you are in that moment and what's going on. Yeah. I 18, I think I had a 2-shot lead at the time, but I thought it was 1. So I was even more nervous on the, I just remember my hands shaking so bad hitting that wedge shot into 18. And you watch it back and you can't even tell that I'm like, it doesn't even look like I'm nervous, you know? So the nerves were 100% there. And you know, to have your family there to celebrate with them, to jump at Poppy's Pond, to be a part of that history of that event. I mean, it was a perfect place for the first win.
Now, I don't want to call you greedy, but winning a British Open is an incredible, like going through the buffet line with the greatest foods possible. But you do it at St. Andrews, which means you got to go through that buffet line twice. The British Open stands alone. I don't care if it's played in your backyard. But when you accomplish that at St. Andrews, golly, how do you even handle that, Stacey?
Well, I can't top it. I will tell you that. It definitely topped. You know, while the win at the Craft Nabisco was super special, I mean, St. Andrews can't top it. It's to be one of two women to have won there, to be a part of that history. And at the time, you know, we hadn't had a lot of Americans have a lot of success at the British Open. So, you know, that was really big for me, was to show that my game could travel and that I could play anywhere in the world. But I played the 2008 Curtis Cup at St. Andrews. It was my last event as an amateur. And got really fortunate. We were all paired with local caddies for the week, just randomly. And I got this guy, Frazier, that was awesome. And he literally taught me how to play links golf that week. You know, he'd say, we're in the long rough. He's like, take a pitching wedge, land it here, and it's going to bounce up there to the hole. And it was like, it worked. I'm like, what is going on? You know, so I learned how to play links golf from him. So I give him a ton of credit for that. And went 5-0 that week. Played the Old Course 11 times that entire week. Just fell in love with links golf. And so coming back for the British Open, you know, I already had this love for links golf. You know, I just love the creativity of it. And that Sunday we played 36 holes because we were winded out on Saturday. And so it was a marathon day where you just start early, they give you lunch and you just keep going. But then at the end, you know, birdie in 17 and 18, walking over the bridge, walking up there to the town, you know, up 18. I mean, it was by far the coolest moment I've had in golf.
I think your dream factory's probably shut down for a while. I don't know any other dreams you could come up with. 5-0 at Curtis Cup and winning the Open Championship at St. Andrews. You know, the one thing I say about St. Andrews in its entirety, Stacey, I can take people that hate golf, and I bring them to that village, and they love it. I pinch myself every time I've been fortunate enough to be on the grounds of St. Andrews. It really is a magical place, aside from St. Andrews, the golf course.
Yeah, just, you know, walking around the town. I mean, you see people walking around with their golf clubs on their shoulders and golf shoes and, you know, just... You know, I feel like every British Open is this way, but when you're there, like, everybody knows the tournament's going on, you know, and the whole town is around it. I love the history of the game. And so, I mean, you can't get any more perfect than that. And just to be able to, you know, to go in the clubhouse and see all the memorabilia, it's, you know, I'm excited that we get to go back this year for this fall or... Yeah, I guess this fall. So we get to go do it again and get to add another woman's name to that list.
We are wrapping things up with 2024 U.S. Solheim Cup captain Stacey Lewis here on Musings on Golf. Okay, back to that 08. I don't know if anyone has done it since, but you were certainly the first to go 5-0 in a single Curtis Cup. What is it about match play for you? You must... thrive on that. What's the psychological edge or the force in that for you?
Yeah, I mean, I've had a love hate with it. I mean, I had a great Curtis Cup record. My Solheim Cup record's not so great, but you know, match play is just a different animal. I mean, sometimes the best player doesn't always win. You know, you could hit some great golf shots, and you know, it doesn't always work out. So, but I do. I mean, I feel like if you're playing some good golf, you're going to have a pretty good chance to win. And Just the grittiness and the fight. I mean, if I get down early, I'm going to take you to 18. I'm going to figure out a way to get you to the 18th hole. And so that's just something I've tried to instill in my team for Solheim Cup is like, you know, let's just show some fight. Let's just go grind it out till the end. I don't care if you lose on 18, but I want you to take them to the 18th hole at least.
You know, Captain, Bob and I have covered and worked a lot of Ryder Cups through the years. I've long felt that in terms of the Ryder Cup, that the American guys, that they want to win, but I also see it very clearly that the Europeans live to win the Ryder Cup. What are the emotions like with the Solheim Cup on each side? Are they similar? Are they different?
I think it's a little bit similar. I think there's certain players that play better at Solheim Cups than they do normally. And I think you've seen that a little bit on the European side over the years, men's and women's. I think you've seen that more on the European side than you have on the American side. So I think that's a little bit of it. I don't know what it is. You know, they always say, oh, we're more of a team and blah, 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 which I don't believe any of that. I mean, these girls are as much of a team as anybody. It's actually been really cool to see the way this group bonded throughout the week, because a lot of them didn't really know each other very well just because our team was so young. And so just the way they bonded throughout the week and, those Saturday, Sunday night dinners were a lot more chatty and a little more crazy than the Monday night dinner, you know? And that's continued now. You know, I'm out there every week with them and, you know, they're going to dinners together. They're playing practice rounds together. So it's, they're cheering for each other, you know, and that's the biggest thing is we can create that environment week in, week out. Solheim Cup becomes really easy.
Thanks. Final question for me before I let Bob finish things up. And this is a question we ask all of our guests. Again, who would round out your green foursome, whether those individuals are still with us or deceased? And where would you play that one magical round of golf?
You know, for a long time, I always said me and my dad. But now I think I'd add my daughter and my husband to that. So, just family's been such a big part of my life. But the place I would go is super easy. I'd go to the old course at St. Andrews.
That's a surprise.
pretty easy, huh, Bob, on that one?
Yeah.
One last thing before I say goodbye, Stacy. You're married to a golf coach. Do you take any input from him? Being the captain, is he allowed to voice his opinion or one of the
I love it.
Guys married to females where we're not allowed to say anything?
No, you know, it's funny. When we first met, he was very hesitant to talk golf, but then it was kind of like, well, this is what we have in common. So, but I do take his input. You know, obviously he knows the game, and especially with Solheim, I really tried to watch how he kind of manages his team and talks to his girls. And, I've bounced ideas off of him. So, yeah, he stayed out of the pairing stuff. You know, he didn't dive into that too much, but he's definitely helped me a lot as far as, you know, managing emotions and managing a team room and things like that.
Well, you got it all, Stacy. Winner of a couple of majors, winning at the home of golf, St. Andrews, and married to golf coach that helps you out. God bless you for being with us on Musings on Golf. You have been a sheer delight.
Awesome, awesome. Thank you.
Like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry. Well, we thank Stacy Lewis so much for joining us here on Musings on Golf, and obviously wish her well. And as I said, going into leading into the interview, I'm a big fan of hers. I always have been, and she's a battler. And I expect the competition in September at RTJ outside of DC is going to be really fierce.
Well, Kelly, speaking of being a big fan, you have to try a pair of William & Harry golf shoes. They're absolutely incredible. They look good. They feel good. They give you better balance. And, you know, whenever you look good, you got a greater tendency of playing good. William and Harry, they are coming onto the market like gangbusters. You're going to be pleased with how much your game improves. You're certainly not going to mind everybody saying to you, man, you got some sharp golf shoes on there. William and Harry is the name.
And my buddy Rhett Butler from William and Harry is going to be bringing out, he's going to be bringing out two new models of shoes in early May. Wait until you see those. And when you visit WilliamAndAndHarry.com, select your shoes and be sure to put in the code KECHARITY and the number 10. That's KECHARITY 10. Hey, Bob, again, we thank Stacy Lewis. Terrific having her. Next week, Hughes Norton, whose new book, Rainmaker, details his remarkable career as a super agent, including being Tiger Woods' very first agent. He also represented a guy named Greg Norman. Fascinating stuff from Hughes Norton. For my super co-host, Bob Bupka, Kelly Elbin signing off on yet another Musings on Golf.